Even though Senator Goldwater was a very senior senator, he had never received any information on this subject through channels. So, he went to General Curtis Leam and asked the general if he would arrange to get him into the Blue Room at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base within the Foreign Technology Division to see the UFO material. Now, he and Gen. Leam had always been very amicable, but Curtis LeMay turned to him and said, "God damn it, Barry. I can't even get into that area, and if you ever ask me about this again, I will personally see that you are court-martialed out of the Air Force." This, to a U.S. senator, U.S. presidential contender and someone who was in the Air Force Reserves, as a general. I'm sitting in the living room with Senator Goldwater, and I asked, "My God, was he serious?" He said, "He was serious as a heart attack." And I never brought it up again. This story gives you an idea of the fear and the extreme secrecy surrounding this subject, even to someone of the stature of Barry Goldwater, founder of the conservative wing of the Republican Party. He was arch-conservative, pro-military, red, white, and blue, dyed through and through. And here he was being told by a friend and a full-low general that he would be court-martialed. Sen. Goldwater said, "I think what you're doing is wonderful." He asked, "What can I do to help you?" And I said, "We're trying to put together a coalition of people who know the details of this at a significant enough level so that we can disclose the UFO matter in a credible way to the public and end the secrecy. The time has come to end this secrecy." Goldwater said, "You've got that right. It was a goddamned mistake then, and it's a goddamned mistake now that this was ever kept secret." So, we started talking about who was involved in this secret, shadowy group. As I went through a list of names of the people involved, I finally asked, "Do you know Admiral Y.N.O.? "Sure, he and I have been friends for years." I said, "Well, hell. He's like MJ, 12 number 3. Goldwater was shocked. "He is?" I said, "Oh, yes. Along with people like Edward Teller and folks like that." Edward Teller had key involvement with these projects. He asked, "Well, what can I do?" I asked, "Would you mind contacting the Admiral for me and asking him if he would meet with me, with the goal of discussing this matter and exploring how we could cooperate to get this information out to the public in a way that would be effective and safe?" He said, "Well, I'll certainly try." So, he did. A few weeks later, I heard back from Senator Goldwater. He said, "Oh, my God. I can't ever bring this up to the Admiral again. I was told in so many words that Admiral Y.N. had busted Goldwater over this, and he was not going to discuss this matter with anyone." This Admiral held several very high government positions and, from one of those positions, went on to be one of the chief people at Science Applications International Corporation, SAIC. Get the picture? Admiral Y.N. is certainly a key person, and has been for decades. I later spoke with Joanne Goldwater, one of Senator Goldwater's daughters, who heads up Goldwater Foods of Arizona. She said, "You know, Daddy really can't help you get to these people anymore." Whatever it was that the Admiral said to him put the fear of God in him. I said, "That's fine. This is a voluntary association and everyone has his limits. I don't ask anybody to do anything that they're not comfortable doing, and I appreciate your dad going as far as he did." Around that same time, I learned that Vice President Humphrey had gone secretly to Kirkland AFB and Sandia Labs, to look into the secret UFO-related technology projects there. He had learned that there were covert projects working on the extraterrestrial materials. A witness who was at Sandia Labs at the time told me personally that he had worked with the UFO projects there and with the extraterrestrial reverse engineering program, specifically the electronics. Vice President Humphrey came to the facility and wanted to come in and see what was there. But the Vice President was told, "Sir, you are not allowed into this area. And if you proceed further, we will shoot to kill." I asked this man, "Were they serious? They would have shot and killed the Vice President of the United States." He said, "Absolutely. He would have been a dead man." Mouse changes on every level: spiritual, cosmological, social, religious, political, scientific, everything. In the last 150 years, there's been more change than the previous 100 centuries before it. How did that happen? It happened because this new creation was manifested through the Godhead at the opening of this cycle. Spiritually, it already exists, in the empyrean realm of celestial knowledge. We can go within and see it, and it is beautiful. Regarding the secret agenda of those addicted to the old world, everything is in play. I've been told by deep insiders that everything is up in the air. It can go either way, which is why we must strive until our last breath to bring forth this new world of universal peace. The more people have their eyes open about this deceptive and manipulative agenda, the better off we all are, because if we know it, we can avoid being stampeded into the folly of Star Wars. Knowledge is power. There's been a lot of manipulation since 9/11, but certain elements have overplayed their hand. And by overplaying their hand, people are seeing that a shadowy agenda is operating that has nothing to do with the security of the United States or the world. Before 9/11, we were talking about the fact that we had multiple sources who described the Cold War giving way to these rogue states and then to global terrorism and then the threat from outer space in the way of asteroids and extraterrestrial threat. And here we are. It's getting late in the game, but the question is whether or not there are enough people still deceived. And the other question is whether there is still enough willingness within these governed programs to pull off a cosmic Gulf of Tonkin. There are a lot of people in these projects who don't know what the real agenda is. It is highly compartmented. Out of the 200, 300 people in the policy group, globally, who deal with this, there are only a small number of them who know what all of the agendas are. And the worst agendas are the ones I'm discussing. There are about 24 people who know the plan at that level. It's very, very, very tightly controlled through compartmentalization. One of our most important objectives is to expose the layers of this agenda to well-meaning people in that covert group. There are defections. There are people who are saying, "I'm not going along with that. I was doing this to keep it secret so these technologies couldn't be weaponized by our enemies, or I was keeping this secret to maintain the stability of the global economic system, or I was keeping this secret because I wanted to be sure that we didn't suddenly collapse the oil industry." But when they find out about some of these agendas, they say, "Wait just one minute." Out of the many thousands of people involved in these projects, and out of the many hundreds involved in policy management, most are deceived regarding the ultimate agenda. That's why it's very important that we not assume anything about people involved with these operations. Many are good people who are themselves being manipulated. That's why some of the key people in this group keep calling me and saying, "Keep moving this forward, we want this fixed." One of them sent me a message that said, "Never, never, 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 never give up." Of course, this is easier said than done. After they've killed your best friend and you have metastatic cancer and you have quit your day job and you have children to put through college and you're being called everything but a witch doctor on the internet, and on and on and on and on, it is demoralizing and often hard to keep going. Keeping moving is the most difficult thing. Some people in these super secret projects are very grateful for what we are doing. At the beginning of our project, there were around 1/3 of the controllers involved who wanted to see disclosure. Now, it is 45-50%. But there's still a very powerful element that is ruthless. Former CIA Director Bill Colby was, in a sense, a test case. People defecting at that level were not going to be tolerated. But that was nearly a decade ago and things change. You can never judge the future by looking at the past, particularly not at this time. There is so much evolution occurring. We should view all these people as educable, and they can transform to a better understanding. Many will come forward and assist us. I have had a recurring, lucid precognitive dream of being at a specific place in the American Southwest where there's a daytime vectoring and contact with an X, extraterrestrial vehicle and a very senior spiritual and diplomatic elder of the extraterrestrials emerges. It is a peaceful, open event, and it is being facilitated by a friendly component of these covert military programs. This incredible event was shown to me in the early 90s. I think that the chance of it happening is actually going up as time marches forward. When did all these super secret projects begin? The truth is, there are still black projects and materials that have not been declassified from the turn of the last century and World War I. There have been elements of this motif of secrecy that have existed in one way or another in society for thousands of years. There have always been cartels. There have always been secret societies trying to acquire secret power. And they have gone through various transformations, depending on the exigencies of the time and place and political and technological circumstances. But certainly in the 20th century there have been very covert programs connected to important industrial interests that have known all about these technologies, particularly the so-called free energy electromagnetic systems, which is what Tesla discovered. Even Faraday had discovered an over-unity effect in some of the experiments he did, in the 1800s. And so there have been interests that have been keeping those things suppressed and quiet for a long, long time. In the 1800s, the era of the Vanderbilts and the Rockefellers and Standard Oil, there were powerful interests that wanted to keep such free energy developments secret. At one time, Standard Oil had a greater income than the government of the United States. That corporation, controlled by the Rockefeller family, was that large and that powerful. Into that monopolistic, industrial environment, geniuses like Tesla or T. Townsend, Brown, and others step. They have so-called zero-point energy and free energy machines, and early high-voltage anti-gravity systems. And there were reports of E.T. craft in the late 1800s, the famous airship scare of 1896. I have it from an excellent source that General MacArthur actually was involved in the retrieval of an E.T. object in China, back in the 1930s. So, there have been programs observing the extraterrestrial matter and at the same time trying to control the technological issue for over 100 years. However, a quantum leap occurred in these programs during the World War II era. Around the time that we developed the knowledge of thermonuclear weapons and were on the path of early space exploration, there were programs that were investigating propulsion systems that looked like flying saucers. Von Braun was involved, as was Edward Teller, Dr. Vannevar Bush and others. Goddard in 1936 and 37 was developing some of Tesla's work. They stole Tesla's anti-gravity work and sold it to the Nazis in the mid-30s. But once we moved from that level of experimentation and development into using thermonuclear weapons and covert anti-gravity propulsion, the extraterrestrial people who had been watching Earth for thousands of years became very concerned. They knew that there's a very short distance from that point of technological development to the ability to go interstellar. And here is a group of people, on this beautiful Earth, who, in a few decades, have gone from horse and buggies to anti-gravity, electromagnetic weapons systems, and thermonuclear devices. Well, you would have to be galactically brain dead not to be very concerned about this. At that time, during and after ET reconnaissance and limited intervention increased. ETs were trying to slow down the pace at which we were going into this destructive trajectory. We have Disclosure Project military witnesses who describe extraterrestrial vehicles intercepting intercontinental ballistic launches off of Vandenberg Air Force Base and over the South Atlantic. ETs were trying to delay our wild push into mutual assured destruction. People like Colonel Diedrichson, who had been with the Atomic Energy Commission, observed that there was a strong extraterrestrial concern at our nuclear facilities. He had personal knowledge of the interception of an intercontinental ballistic missile that had been specially developed so it could be exploded on the moon. The ETs intercepted it before it could become exotmospheric. By the 1940s, we were actually knocking down extraterrestrial vehicles near Roswell, New Mexico, which at the time was our only nuclear base. We have an FBI document written to J. Edgar Hoover stating that a specially configured radar system was responsible for downing those ET craft. By the 1960s we had the ability to travel among the stars, as Ben Rich said. Rogue covert projects had developed electromagnetic systems that involved the ability to alter consciousness and harm people. By the way, Tesla actually had a functioning anti-gravity experiment working and witnessed before the Wright brothers flew. During President Eisenhower's administration, any semblance of constitutionality and legality associated with these projects went down the toilet, and it has been out of control ever since. The shadow government stabbed Eisenhower in the back. Subsection of the Hell's Angels that routinely engage in torture and human sacrifice and vivisection, where they cut you open alive, in order to enforce secrecy in certain settings. I know a man who is an energy researcher who worked with a victim of the devil's disciples. They wear necklaces that have a tooth from each person they've killed on it. So, they knocked his teeth out and eviscerated him, and left him to die, but he survived. Today, he is a very anti-social person and doesn't want to have much to do with humans. The devil's disciples are working under contract from some of these rogue criminal enterprises that are involved with the hard, core end of the secrecy. Much of the security is outsourced to entities like Quackenhood for traditional security. But then there are these non-traditional enforcers. A covertop sky I know in Arizona acquired the carp tape, where what appears to be either an alien reproduction vehicle or an actual ET craft went out of control and crash, landed near a military facility in Canada. During the retrieval operation, one of the special teams involved filmed the landed craft. The person who made this film was doing it clandestinely. It's a very shaky film. I have it. It came to me with some photographs of what looked like some ET life forms. This film and the man who shot it made their way to a person who is Black Ops but presents himself as a concerned UFO researcher and digital image analyst. So he gave this person who made the film a safe house on his ranch in Arizona. Well, I'm not sure that it was a safe house at all. One day, this protector came back out to the ranch, and hammered to the mailbox of the ranch was a baggie with a finger in it, with a little piece of paper that said, "Dwep. Terminate with extreme prejudice." They never found this person, and it is presumed that he was killed. The owner of the ranch told me this story. The people who are in these key roles are often the because they have been brought along, intergenerationally, that is from one generation to another. For example, I mentioned James Jesus Angleton, who signed off on the wiretap of Marilyn Monroe. I was contacted by a descendant, who is enormously wealthy and involved in this covert group, but not with the agency. Everything important is outside the agency, in the private world. After the Disclosure Project event, he called me up and said, "You've moved our timeline of bringing this information out up by 6 to 12 years. I said, "Good." He added, "We're looking at this material with NATO. There is a compartmented op. Iration within NATO headquarters that deals with this, in Europe." He explained, "But what we are planning to do, and we would like for you to cooperate with this, is that in a few years, we're planning to have the key political, military and religious leaders of the world announce that ETs have been detected and we have evidence that we're not alone and that there are extraterrestrials." I said, "It's a bit late in the day for that, don't you think?" He was trying to talk me into delaying disclosure to match their time table. Of course, I have been approached this way before, Rimam, but General T.E. said, "My concern is that in delaying disclosure, there would be an opportunity to further consolidate power around an agenda that is the antithesis of the direction the Earth should be taking." The more sympathetic members of this group, including this gentleman, Angleton, are open to getting this information out sooner rather than later. There is so much spy versus spy going on within the shadow government, and there are so many factions and shifting alliances, it's an extremely dynamic situation. People have a tendency to view this covert control group as monolithic and fixed, but it isn't. It's very dynamic, even fractured. We have significant protection around the Disclosure Project from unusual places. Since 1998, none of our military witnesses have even been told, be quiet. Not one. None of them have been threatened. I met with a cell of the shadow government, prior to the 2001 Disclosure Project National Press Conference. I said, please make your people aware of the following, we welcome your assistance, or you may be neutral. But if you harm one hair on the head of any of these men or women or anyone associated with the projects or even make a threat in that regard, or should I step off a curb in Washington on the way to a meeting and get hit by a metro bus, there will be serious consequences. They knew we meant it. We have extraordinary spirit warriors who protect us, on Earth and elsewhere. It does not mean we are invincible, far from it. But it is a check and balance, and it is just. There can be no promises. All I know is that all that can be done is being done. Since my near-death experience at age 17, I have had a very different perspective on what this life is about. It has informed everything I've done. We are here briefly, but our lives are eternal. We must walk our path, fulfill our destiny, and in that there is meaning. So, I put aside my work as an emergency doctor, and dedicated myself to this work. I will admit to deeply missing the hands on taking care of patients. But now I have to view Earth and her children as my patients, and do the best I can to take care of them. It is worth the sacrifice, because the time we live in is setting the direction for the next 500,000 years of human evolution. We live in a truly quantum cosmic moment. It is somewhat ironic that people often ask, aren't you concerned when one of these UFOs is nearby, that something might harm you? I say, no, except to the extent that there are other people nearby. The threat is always coming from humans, not extraterrestrials. We have many cases where people pulled out their guns and started shooting at a UFO, no questions asked. And in some cases, they have attempted to shoot XETI teams. In Mexico in March of 97, out of the 5 nights we were out doing contact work, 4 of those nights we were assaulted by armed police who were really just roving bands of bandits, extorting money from people. On one particular night, near Atlamaya, we set up near an old fort, at the base of the volcano. Suddenly we saw a police car sneaking up on us with armed police walking in front of the car, rifles drawn. I mentally saw a flash that they were going to rob us and kill us. We were in a meditative state and so we called on the divine being for protection. We specifically focused peace and divine protection on the police. Initially, the police were agitated and hostile, very threatening. But they went from that state to being almost placid, instantly. They inexplicably sat down, put their guns down, pulled out a guitar from the police car, and started playing the guitar. I turned to our group and I said, in one seamless movement, pick up everything you have, get in our car, and we're leaving. We did this like our lives depended on it, then briefly said, adios, as they were playing the guitar. It went from a situation that was extremely frightening to one that was extremely peaceful, through the effect of a divine calming influence. We got in the car and then, at enormous speed, I drove our group back into the compound where we were staying. We didn't know how long they would be in that placid, dream-like state. They were armed, cocked, ready to go, and I was determined to get us to safety. But this shows how the divine, cosmic being can change a situation, mysteriously, quickly, if we will call on that power. Announced. It was almost too much to take. I was about to shut down all of these projects in August of 2000. And then along comes Dr. Jan Bravo. Jan made a substantial donation to the Disclosure Project which enabled us to cover all the out-of-pocket expenses to get the May 2001 Disclosure event completed. If it hadn't been for Jan, there's no question at all, I would have pulled the plug on the entire project. So, thank you, January. Once we got back on track, I traveled around with a camera, filming witnesses mostly on my own. Now, anyone who knows me and machines has to laugh. Forget levitating a car. That's easy. Getting me, the biggest mechanical moron on planet Earth, to operate a digital cam, era by myself, now that's a real miracle. I have no problem intubating someone who's just been shot through the neck or, duh, fibrillating a heart. But a digital video camera. Once we had identified enough of these resources, catalogued them and put them in a database, we set a date for the event. It was an enormous undertaking done with minimal resources and all volunteers. We had over 110 hours of videotaped testimony, from the former USSR to Spain and Italy and England to France and Latin America and all over the United States. We have insider testimony from every agency and from every era, from the 40s right up to the 90s. I had to take all the original digital videotape and using a dual G4 Apple computer and a simple video editing program, go through all the videotape, edit it, make the cuts and create a log for every scene and every witness. I did this all myself, because someone who knew the whole picture had to do the cut. I edited the 110 hours of testimony down to about 35 hours. And then I took the 35 hours and edited it down to about 18 hours. Those 18 hours were given to Jeff Hill, God bless him, and in his free time, working full-time at Laser Pacific and raising two young children, took the 18 hours and created the Disclosure Project videos. We had no budget for it. This was achieved only by donated labor, material and real dedication. Also, the 35 hours of videotape were used to create 35 hours of audio tape. That audio tape was then given to a transcription service that transcribed it into text. That text was then loaded onto discs that I put on my laptop computer. It was 1,200 pages of transcripts. That had to be boiled down to what became the disclosure book, that also had to include all the government documents and other documentation and position papers. And I had to write all that and all the transition pieces in about 2 months to create a 600-page book. It was an all-consuming undertaking. We engaged the National Press Club and Sarah McClendon, the famed White House correspondent, was our official host. When we launched this event at the National Press Club, all we could afford was a one-woman shop for a PR agent. I wrote all the press releases and she and I began to notify the press that this important event involving dozens of top, secret military witnesses to UFO events was about to happen. We lit up the system and everybody was waiting for this event to happen on May 9, 2001. We'll get the little Holloman room for this event. It's all you'll need. Oh, no, we need the ballroom. But that room is never used, except for very large and important events. This will be a very large and important event. You've got to be out of your mind. No, we need the entire ballroom. Well, the last time they filled the ballroom was when President Reagan was there. Just get it. Do it. Okay, you won't listen to me. But I'll get it. The day of disclosure, she was so glad we had the ballroom, because it was packed with 22 cameras at the back of the room and the entire media. About 20 of these military and government-related witnesses were present. ConnectLive is the official web, cast and internet hosting entity for the National Press Club, and also for CNN and the Pentagon. They were engaged to webcast the entire event, live. Well, the president of ConnectLive told me after the event that as we went live, the first hour of the testimony was externally, electronically jammed. He had never seen this happen. Now, we knew there would be an attempt by the NSA to jam the webcast, and our security had seen activity to that effect the night before, logistics being set up. As it turned out, the webcast got back up after an hour and it ended up being the most watched webcast in the history of the internet. The people at ConnectLive later pulled me in and showed me the bandwidth that was used. This event used up every T1 line. We have never seen this kind of volume, for a news webcast. The number of people viewing the event live was 500,000 people, and they do not know how many people tried to get on but were unable to connect. Ultimately, the whole 2 Our press conference was viewed by over 3 million people. It was covered briefly by various news agencies, CNN and BBC and most other major news groups. The general manager of the National Press Club was stunned at the number of news people present.